different for us all. And today we'll be discussing a topic that truly is not talked about enough: infertility. Anyone challenges to starting a family. Infertility does not discriminate, no matter your race, religion, sexuality, or economic status. You can be affected. So first, let's start with the basics. What is infertility? Infertility is defined as a condition of the reproductive system that prevents the conception of children. It affects approximately 10 to 15% of couples throughout the United States. The diagnosis of infertility is usually given to couples who have been attempting to conceive for at least 1 year without success. I know personally, I never really thought about how hard it could be for women to struggle having kids. No one in my family, including myself, ever experienced any difficulty getting pregnant. Honestly, I thought I would have trouble conceiving Devin because I was on the depot shot. The doctors told us it could take up to a year getting off in order to conceive again. And in 3 short months later, he was here. I think for Dallas, Dre might have sneezed on me and I was already pregnant. So honestly, it wasn't something I ever really had to think about or knew anyone personally that had experienced infertility. So now fast forward several years to me joining this online Bible study with these amazing women from all over the world that are living their husband's dreams. Their husbands play basketball overseas, and we're all looking for like-minded community founded in Christ. And several of the members started to ask for prayer regarding infertility. And I immediately start to feel so horrible. My heart breaks for these women because I can't empathize. I can't sympathize with them because I've never experienced what they're going through. From miscarriages to trouble getting pregnant at all, to even experiencing something as awful as a stillbirth, I now had a small understanding of what so many women go through on a daily basis. Because you'll never know how badly you want something until you're told that it may not be possible. I'm so, so grateful for my personal relationship with my amazing friend, Meg, who is the founder and executive director of Bibles and Basketball, who is currently still in the wait for her miracle from God. Meg actually, like I said, she started Bibles and Basketball, and she's here with me today to give us a glimpse into what this journey has been like for her and her husband as they walk this, not alone, but with God, which is the most important thing that I think has been able to get them through it. Ultimately, how they've been able to keep their faith during the season that God has them in right now. So Meg, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Of course, she's always so vulnerable and so open about her journey and so willing to share and be just a vessel for other women that may be experiencing it as well. And for those like me who haven't ever experienced it and just really want to know what it's been like. So I'm so grateful for you, Meg, to be so open. And I know this is a difficult conversation to have. But it is a necessary conversation. And so I'm glad I get to have it with you, my love.
So I'm grateful I'm talking to you about it, even though the whole world can't possibly hear this in a few minutes.
Well, I don't know if Mommy on the Move has touched the whole world yet, but you know.
But we're getting there. We're getting there.
We're getting there. So obviously this is something that is very personal. So I'm going to let you take the wheel a little bit and you tell me a little bit about what your journey to motherhood has looked like so far.
Oh man, that's a big open-ended question there. Well, Thomas and I got married 4 years ago, and a year into marriage, we really felt like we were ready and we wanted to start planning for a family and start trying and knowing, like, when you start trying, it's generally a few months before it happens. And so that's when we were prepared for was a few months. Like, it's not going to happen right away. Although that first month we were like, oh, did it happen yet? And so we knew it could take a few months. And I think we really got brainwashed because one of our really good friends were on our team that season and they were pregnant. And so then we were like, oh, we got to have a baby with them. We love them so much. Like, our kids are going to be best friends. So right. We better get on this. And no, I'm kidding. We were personally ready. And so that was 3 years ago. And in June, we hit 3 years of struggling with infertility. Uh-huh. And yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now.
Okay. And so how long after starting to try, did you start to think there may be an issue?
Well, when we hit the 1 year mark, that's okay. When I got anxious. So like at 11 months, I was like, oh, this is that last month before they tell you there's probably something going on. We had kind of done our research. By we, I mean me. because I like to have all the answers.
Right.
And so then I was like filling Thomas in as I was Googling things. And so like I knew that the 1 year mark was when they would start saying like something's going on. And actually our friends who were pregnant that year, they were nervous. You know, she was telling me about how she was nervous because they were approaching that 1 year mark also right before they got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so she had been, you know, also filling me in, and she was a great source of information. And then I remember there being this 1 month where I thought I was pregnant and I was throwing up and having the nausea and extremely tired, and even went and had all the blood work done. And was super defeated when I got that phone call, and she, because even like the team doctor was so excited, and you know, our friend who was on our team rode with me to the doctor's office, and so we were like, the three of us were so excited in the doctor's office. And then she, you know, I could hear it in her voice that she was even sad when she called to tell me that I wasn't pregnant. And so it was around, to get back to your original question, it was around month 11 that I started getting a little nervous. And then at that 1 year mark, like, I knew, oh, this is that point that they tell you something's going on. Let's look into this.
Yeah. And so was there a point where a doctor has, I don't know, do they diagnose you as infertile, or do they say, I mean, what has there been that moment for you guys?
Well, I don't know exactly what she said because we went in Belgium.
Understandable. Oh, well, then you have a tattoo.
So she was, her English was limited. My Dutch was limited. So we were doing what we could do to get by in this appointment. But pretty much we went in for that appointment and she said, you know, everything looks good. And then that's when they start scheduling things and like, okay, let's kind of figure out if it's a timing issue, if it's a you issue, or if it's a him issue. And they start doing a little more research. So I don't know that there's, I've never been to the doctor for it in America. So I don't know if in America there's like a real diagnosis for it. I assume that now that they're starting, I think we're on, there's a handful of states now. I'm not going to put a number out there because there's a 95% chance that that number is going to be incorrect. So I'm not going to put a number on it, but there's a handful of states now that do allow infertility to be an issue that's covered by insurance. And so my assumption would be that you have to have been diagnosed officially as infertile in those situations. But as far as in Belgium, it's like a, yeah, something's going on. Here we go. Here's kind of our plan of action.
And I will wonder even if that's cultural, like if here a year is like all sirens go, and every, and other places, maybe it's not as big of a deal.
Yeah, definitely. We've dealt with infertility now in Belgium, Romania, and France. I never saw a gynecologist in Romania, but the doctor generally you know, kind of spoke about it. And it was definitely a different tone and a different urgency right. than they spoke about it in Belgium. And in Belgium, they are the number one country in the world for infertility research. And so we actually had infertility doctors at our church and infertility researchers at our church. And mm-hmm. so we had a lot of resources at our hands. And they definitely, they spoke about it in a way that didn't cause panic, but noted yeah. that it's kind of a serious thing.
Right. So tell me about after that appointment, leaving that appointment, what was that like for you?
So we had two different kind of first visit appointments. We mm-hmm. went to this one doctor, and apparently this is okay, I'm just going to put this out there. This is a disclaimer that anything I do, I end up having a story to tell about it. So we get the doctor.
That's the best part about talking to Meg is she always has a story.
It's terrible. It's terrible. There's always a story. So instead of just like going to a doctor's appointment, having a normal doctor, getting some normal answers, and you go home, we ended up getting the doctor who just got off of probation for being like inappropriate with patients.
Oh, no.
And she was so rude, and she was just like, just really mean, and was really like, she didn't have a gentle touch about her.
Yeah, no bedside manner.
No bedside manner at all. And then her actual physical touch when she's doing the examination was also not very gentle.
Oh, God.
And so she was really mean. And Thomas and I both left there like, oh my gosh, what, like, how mean could a doctor be in such a sensitive issue right. like right. like this is something we're really sad about, and she just made us feel terrible. Yeah. So then we took her schedule that she made. So what happens is, like, in Belgium, this was our experience, so I can't speak for everywhere, right. But they gave us like a schedule of, this is based on the dates you've given us, this is what we expect to be your ovulation cycle and your menstruation cycle, and so these are the days that you need to have sex and come back, we'll tell you if it worked or not, and then from there it will be an insemination process of, like, we're getting real technical here. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
So it would be a matter of, on the scheduled days that they know, like, they've gone in and they've seen that I'm ovulating, then Thomas has to be there to volunteer his sample. And then
that was a nice way to put that.
Right? That one just ran right off my tongue.
Just came to you?
Yeah, it did. It just came to me. And so he's there. And then they inseminate me, like, turkey baster it up in there. Mm. And, mm-hmm. you know, you getting that image? Is that helpful?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm, yep.
And so that was the process. So we took her calendar and worked with that based off of the dates that she gave us. Mm-hmm. And then when that wasn't working out, so we did that for 2 months and that didn't work. So then we got an appointment with a different doctor, and she was so nice. And she pretty much told us the same things, but she said it a lot nicer and was much more right. gentle about it. And so it came off a lot better, and we came out of that more kind of, we were really sad but hopeful of, like, okay, right. she's really nice, and she, like you could see it on her face that her heart breaks with each patient that she has to tell they're not pregnant.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot easier to deal with than the first appointment. So then what happened was, we left that appointment, and before we could even schedule the turkey bastering, we lost in the playoffs and came home. So mm-hmm. then we're with, I mean, you understand our life, but for anybody who's listening who doesn't, we are overseas for about 10 months a year, and then in America for 2 to 3 months. If everything's mm-hmm. going as planned at the basketball world, that's never okay. promised. But we also have really, really, really good healthcare in Belgium. So out of all of those appointments and blood work tests they did, all sorts of things, I only ever paid 78 euros, which is like wow. 90 bucks. So our healthcare over there is really amazing. Even for IVF, we've had friends who did IVF in Belgium, and the most they've paid completely for the whole process was 300 euros. So wow. like $450. So we choose not to do any of it in America. One, because we're not here for a long enough period to be at a doctor consistently. But then also because it's expensive here.
So expensive. Which is really awful. It is.
Yeah, it is.
I was really glad to hear you say that we're starting to get towards trending where it's a medical condition that maybe can be covered under insurance that will be life-changing for some people. So
it will be. That's really amazing. It's huge because there are people who spend upwards, even over $20,000 on IVF and then it doesn't work.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then, Lord, if you have the baby, then there's the money never stops.
And then you got these expensive children on your hands.
My goodness. Yeah. So that's, I'm glad to hear that's changing, that tide is changing, and how amazing that you guys have been able to use those resources overseas to where, you know, you can get them at such an affordable price and right in the heart of where they're doing forward thinking infertility research and stuff like that. So that's really amazing that you guys have had that experience so far. Up until this point. So we're still at the point, obviously, for anybody who hasn't figured out, they still have not conceived up until this point today. And so I wanted to know for you, as a woman, what has that process been like for doctors to tell you, or for you month to month to go each month and keep looking at negative pregnancy tests and to see, you know, to know that it's so far out of your control, and no matter how bad you want it, you know, your body just isn't in agreement right now. Like, what has that process been like for you mentally?
It's been heavy.
Yeah.
And it's really discouraging, defeating. I mean, I got to a point where it was probably a little over a year ago, probably March, April-ish of 2017. Mm-hmm. I had to remember what year we were in really quick. Mm-hmm. So excuse me for that. but probably March, April of 2017 that I quit buying pregnancy tests. There was just another month that I was crying on the bathroom floor and had to wait for Thomas to come in the door and tell him, like, again, we're not pregnant.
Yeah.
And seeing the hurt on his face and that, like, excitement, you know, when he thought this is the one, like, that one was a baby. I felt it. Yeah. And having to tell him it's not this month. And it's like this monthly day of, like, grieving.
Yeah.
Of not having a baby that we're longing for, and then seeing like I do the baby room at church because it's my favorite part of church. It's just mm-hmm. holding everybody else's babies. Mm-hmm. And then the way that Thomas looked at babies and he points them out to me, like, normally I'm the crazy person that's like, oh my gosh, look at that cute little baby. And then it got to a point where Thomas was like, oh, look at that baby. Like, I want to hold it, but it's not mine. I might break it. So,
right.
So I'm not going to hold that baby. But it weighed heavily on me, and like this guilt of, like, my body's not letting me down, but it's letting us down.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, we had been in that almost 2 years, and it was this heavy guilt of, like, my body's not letting us down at this point. My body's failing us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is what my body was created to do in our marriage, is, like, not the only thing, obviously, but I'm the one that bears the children, and it's not working. Mm-hmm. And here's my husband who wants it so badly, and I do too, but I'm more hurt for him and carry this huge burden of failing us mm-hmm. in that.
Mm. That has to be so hard, because not that it would make it easier, but there's physically nothing wrong. And so there's really no formula that says this plus this equals baby. Well, there,
right.
I think there is one, right?
Yeah.
But then you get into it, and there's physically nothing wrong with you or Thomas. You guys are healthy. You're young. You know, all of the signs lead to you should be pregnant. You should have a baby. And I mean, 3 years of trying, you could have had multiple babies at this point, honestly, you know?
Yeah.
And so to constantly have this monthly reminder that you're not, I know has to be difficult. So when you're experiencing this every month, I know you said about a year ago, you started to just kind of feel like your body was failing you. How did you come back from that? Are you back from that? Are you still in that space? How do you guard your mind and your heart during the wait?
Well, at that point, it was a struggle. It was hard to guard my mind and guard my heart. It's been a long road to get to here. I wouldn't say I'm completely at peace with it. Yeah. Which I struggle a lot with being at peace with it is giving God permission to not give me a child. Mm-hmm. And knowing that's two different things, but actually stepping into it and allowing myself to be at peace with it is completely different.
Yeah.
I know that's not true. But at the same time, there's still a huge part of my flesh that doesn't want to give God permission to never give me a child. Yeah. And so, I'm much better now than I was at that point mm-hmm. of that day laying on the floor in the bathroom or sitting on the floor in the bathroom crying mm-hmm. and remembering it being like, this is the last time I'm buying a pregnancy test.
Yeah.
And so I actually shared about that. That was the only time I've shared on social media about infertility. But I shared about that one just because it was a turning point of am I giving up or am I trusting the Lord's
giving
timing?
It to God, right?
Right. And
it's a fine line, right?
It is. Yeah. It really is. And so for the past year, it's been navigating that of how do I hope in the Lord, still strive for this, still grieve it every month, mm-hmm. and then also stay hopeful and stay joyful and find myself at peace. And so that's been hard, but a big part of it has been not boxing myself in, like not compartmentalizing those emotions of stepping into them. And when I'm mad, like let myself be mad mm-hmm. with God. Like God mm-hmm. knows that I'm mad at him.
Yep.
I don't have to
whether
hide
we
it
admit
him.
It or not, right?
Right. Exactly. Like he already knows that I'm feeling that.
Yeah.
And so stepping into that with God and God, like hearing God tell me, like, come to me with that emotion and we can deal with it. Mm-hmm. Just like with any other relationship. Tiara, if I'm mad at you and I just bottle it all up, it's going to cause distance in our relationship.
Right.
Instead of coming to you and having that hard conversation of, this is why I'm mad at you. This mm-hmm. is how you've hurt me. And I don't know what's going to happen next in this conversation. You might backhand me. And we're done. We're never going to be friends again.
Okay, first of all, I'm nonviolent. Lots of anger management and it's working well for me, okay?
Do you have your 90-day chip now?
I do. Thank you very much.
Oh, no. I'm
no,
completely
but I think
kidding,
that's such an important piece because I think as Christians, we think it's not okay to say we're angry with God, right?
Right.
But, and I honestly didn't know that. We did one of the studies we did this season was 1 Peter. And she asks us, the author asks us, where are you disappointed with God in your life right now? And that was so freeing. That was such a freeing experience for me because I felt like I was keeping something from God. Like I was pretending like I was good with God in all these places. And
right.
where I really wasn't. And it may sound silly to some people, but when I was able to express that, I didn't hold that anger, that frustration, that resentment, that bitterness anymore. I was able to let it go. And honestly, I can't even tell you what I wrote down where I was angry with him because I'm not anymore.
Right.
And it's such a freeing experience. And so to know for anybody that may be experiencing this, if it causes you to get to this place, don't feel like it's just you or you're alone or you're wrong in feeling that way, but just address it head on and take it straight to God and say, this is what I'm asking you. This is a desire of my heart. Why haven't you fulfilled it? Where are you? Because there are times where we feel like God isn't there. Where do you feel like he's not meeting you? And it's important to have those revelations and to seek answers from him, and for him to reassure you that I'm here, that I've never left you. I'm never going to leave you. But we gotta be willing to say it out loud in order for him to say that back to us though. Right.
Exactly. You have to approach God in that conversation and allow it to be a conversation.
Right.
Allow, like, take the time to listen and hear what God's saying.
Yeah.
And let him tell us, like, he's probably not going to tell you why.
Right.
So let's just go into this conversation.
Let's just let that go.
Prepared.
Right.
That he's most likely not going to tell you why. He does not like to give you the game plan, but he will remind you of his promises. And and it's an incredible peace that comes with it. And like I said, I'm still in this conversation in this area in terms of infertility. Like you said, in our study this year, we had to write that down. Like, what's something that you're mad at God about? And that comes up almost every study. What's something you need to surrender to him? What's something that is keeping you from your relationship with him? What's something you're mad at him about? And every time, and I got to a point also this season when that question came up, and sometimes it sucks to be leading Bible study because they're like, this is the moment where I'm like, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. Like, I quit. Like, I don't want to answer this question again.
Yeah.
I don't want to write infertility again. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been writing the same answer for the past 7 studies we've done over the past 3 years because it's still happening.
Yeah.
And it sucks for people to ask, like, how can I be praying for you? And again, I have to say infertility.
Yeah.
Like, I'm tired of that being my prayer request.
Yeah.
And being vulnerable and honest with God about that. And so that's a huge way how I guard my heart in it, is being honest with God about it, but also guarding our process of, people have the best intentions. Mm-hmm. They really do.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody has a solution. Everybody has,
stand on your head, do it fast.
Right? Yeah.
Hold,
stop thinking about it. You know, like, all of these different ways. And then they also have their opinions. And even though most people don't, you know, really let you know they have an opinion about it, it's written all over their face.
Right.
Or, you know, it's clear, made clear in their short answers or things like that. And so really guarding our process and trusting that that's what's best for us right now.
Mm-hmm.
And being confident in that, like, Thomas and I made this decision and we're standing on it, and it's okay to not tell people about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when they ask, like, we're still waiting.
Right.
And if they ask for more details, I don't have to give them every single detail, or I don't have to go into, well, every detail about
right,
it.
Right.
Like, I don't have to explain it to them.
You take the power back in the,
right,
in the conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then also celebrating others. And that has been, it's this weird place of, like, I am genuinely happy for you, and at the same time, I'm deeply hurting.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to...
How do you navigate that? Because we know, even just within our group, we've had lots of women who have, that's been their prayer request. And then we've had so many Bibles and Basketball Babies.
Babies. They're
so
everywhere.
So many babies. It's the year of the baby. I was
really, it really is.
This year on study, on call.
That you were going to get pregnant?
I had the call. 9 girls that were pregnant or having babies on my call. And I was like, I'm dodging these girls left and right. Like, I'm not trying to catch it. So, Meg is like, let me hop on your call.
Right. Can I get in on this?
What's in the water on your call? And I'm like, I don't know, but I'm spitting it out. I don't want any problems. But how hard does that have to be as a leader? I mean, women are bringing you this prayer request, right? And so this is a place where you've admitted, this is a place where you're angry with God, you're frustrated, you're struggling yourself. And then, of course, how do you pray them through it? How do you celebrate for your friends who are popping up? It feels like left and right, like every day feels like, I'm sure, like you're seeing somebody else that's pregnant, that wasn't pregnant before, but they're pregnant now. How do you work through those emotions?
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's all of these emotions at once of, like, I'm so happy for you and so hurting all at the same time.
Yeah.
And again, allowing myself to hurt because that is, it's not an emotion that you can swallow. I think that that's one thing our flesh tricks us into thinking is that let me just swallow this and it'll go away. Mm-hmm. But what happens is it just gets buried and it festers and it builds up bitterness and resentment.
It comes and out it one just, way or another.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly. And so letting myself step into that hurt, even if it's just in the bathroom at a baby shower, like, let me just go cry real quick.
Right.
And then I can come back and I choose to be happy.
Yeah.
And I choose to celebrate and making a conscious effort to reach out personally, not just like, let me like their picture.
Yeah.
But let me genuinely be joyful in this moment with them mm-hmm. and genuinely celebrate. Like, recently, one of our leaders in Bibles and Basketball shared that she's pregnant. And one thing I get a lot, especially from our leadership team, is, you know, you're one of the first people I wanted to tell, but I was so scared to come tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that. I don't want people to be afraid to tell me their exciting news because I understand how much of a miracle it is.
Yeah.
I completely get it. And I am so happy for you because one day I'm going to get that joy.
Mm-hmm.
And so today I'm choosing. It's completely a choice. If I followed my feelings every time, I would have no friends. They would all be like, she's so mean. But it's a choice that I make. And it's a discipline that I've decided to have in my life of choosing to call them or message them.
Mm-hmm.
And genuinely like, I want them to hear my voice so it's not fake.
Right.
Like she says that, but I know she really is hating me right now because I'm pregnant and she's not. But I want them to hear in my voice, like, I am genuinely joyful for you and this miracle right now. And not just, I'm over here sad. But it doesn't have to be one or the other. Like, I can be sad and joyful for you all in one.
So how important, speaking of friendships, how important has community been during this time for you?
Oh, super, super, super important.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very dynamic and diverse community mm-hmm. of having friends who aren't married,
mm-hmm.
aren't trying to have kids. They know nothing about it, so they can't give me any advice.
Yeah. Which can be nice, right?
Right. They just listen and they're sad because they want this little, you know, friend, niece or nephew kind of thing.
Right.
And then also having women who have children and can tell me how crazy they are sometimes.
Like
like Tiara. And, you know, when we're just having a casual business call and then there's a penis pops up.
Y'all. Me and Meg was at, and Alicia, there's another leader. We're having the most serious call today. We're getting stuff done. We're like pumping through our to-do list. And I look over my shoulder. Well, actually, I'm looking in the camera. We're FaceTiming on the camera. We're having a business call like on FaceTime because we're all in three different places in the country. And next thing I see is just penis and balls over my shoulder. And I'm just like, what? And then not only are they there, he's dancing and jiggling and gyrating all up in the camera. So we are officially family.
We are.
Meg and Alicia are officially Auntie Meg and Auntie Alicia because they have seen my baby in all his glory. So, yes, she gets a front row seat to the craziness that is the Haynes household.
Oh, yes. And I love every bit of
it. Yes, I'm sure she does. But, you know, it is like, even for me, the days when I want to complain about motherhood, sometimes I hesitate because I'm like, there's somebody out there, not even necessarily just Meg. There's somebody out there that wants this more than anything. But honestly, y'all, it doesn't make it any easier to deal with my crazy kids because somebody, and I want them. I mean, I'm not, well, some days I do ask people if they want them too. I do try to give them away for a quarter every now and then. But y'all know I would never give my kids to anybody else. But there are days where it's just hard. And I feel like that needs to be a part of the conversation too. It can't just be the unicorns and rainbows and puppies that everybody thinks parenthood is. And I think that people need to be fully prepared because once I prayed for these kids too. And then once they're here, then you'd be like, what was I thinking? There are days. Like, what was I thinking? And not once, not twice, but three times. There's only one of me. What was that? I'm so outnumbered over here. What am I doing? And so, I mean, I think we all need to just be able to be comfortable to share where we are and not yeah. be offended by where somebody else is or what somebody else is experiencing. Meg knows when I come to her and I'm talking about these kids driving me crazy, she knows it's from a place of, I am exhausted and I need a friend to yeah. that I can. And just like she said, she's my friend right now where she doesn't have kids yet. So she doesn't have any opinions either. So she's just going to be like laughing in the background, like, girl, them kids is crazy, and just keep it moving.
Exactly. Exactly.
You want to have somebody that can just listen and not have an opinion, but we all need to be that for each other. So be that to your friends that are in the wait as well. And just be an ear. I mean, I feel like
yeah.
that was such a powerful piece of advice for those of us who don't understand, is sometimes the best thing we can do is to just listen.
Yeah. And I think asking that next question of, like, instead of coming with advice yeah. or a statement, asking that next question of, like, so infertility comes up and a lot of us have this first instinct of fix yeah. it, like, or this is awkward, let me get out of the right. conversation. But to dig into those deeper relationships and to genuinely be there for mm-hmm. someone, ask another question of, like, maybe, well, how can I specifically be praying right. for you through this? Right. Or how, you know, how are you feeling yeah. through this? Instead of offering yeah. advice or, oh, I'm going to pray for you, see you later, bye. Like, neither of those are helpful.
Right. Or actually praying together. I mean, you know, our yes. most powerful prayers are when we pray out loud together in front of. In,
yeah, exactly.
You know, and so that can be life-changing too. But I think that I'm a counselor at heart. And so I love to have these types of conversations with people, but it's hard for me because I don't have an answer. So I'm a counselor I'm a fix it counselor though. Like, okay, well, let's, mm-hmm. what's our plan of action? And there is no plan here. You know, we have to wait it out with y'all just like y'all do.
Right.
And so,
and being okay with yeah. that, being okay with, like, I don't have to have the yes. answer to be here
yes.
for you.
Yes. Just being there is more than enough.
Exactly.
So how would
you... And then also having friends.
No, sorry. You're right. Go ahead.
But within this community, also having friends who are going through it with yeah. you. So I have two close friends who are, we don't talk every day. We don't talk every week. But we talk often enough and are confident enough in our friendship to know that we're praying for each other mm-hmm. through this. And we think of each other often. Whether it's just like, I'm going to tag her in this post mm-hmm, I saw on Facebook mm-hmm. of somebody else dealing with infertility. I'm going to voice message her this prayer today. Oh, I'm reading this verse. Like, let me send it to these two people really quick. And being able to share the journey with yeah. them. And each of us are in a different place of, like, I have unexplained infertility. One of our friends has explained infertility mm-hmm. and they're getting treatment for that. And then the other one in our little trio has gone through IVF. And so we're all at different places and it's just this really safe yeah. place of being able to be in the same place and also in different places within the area.
So
yeah. And so those are the three different mm-hmm. kinds of community yeah. that I'm grateful I have.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Perfect. 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 I love it. So since we're kind of on community, what negative and positive impacts would you say this has had on your marriage?
Ooh, on the marriage. Mm-hmm.
The okay. most important relationship, right?
Yeah, it really is. Well, I have to say, Thomas has been incredible through it. He has been amazing. Like, I really, anytime infertility comes up, that's generally the first thing I say, but I didn't say that.
I messed you up because I started asking questions. It was my fault.
But generally, that's where I go first because his leadership has just been impeccable. Wow. Of like watching him really come into leading me through yeah. this because I'm very bossy.
Mm-hmm. Really? I would have never thought that. Insert sarcasm.
So I generally am like, here's the game plan. And that's actually how we had our first infertility appointment was he was like, I don't really think we should have an appointment yet. Like, I don't think we're ready for that in terms of where we were with the Lord in infertility, and personally and like emotionally where we were with infertility. And then I just made the appointment and was like, "Well, you have the car, so you have to drive me. Let's go to this appointment." made him go to the appointment, and once we got there, he kind of like side eyed me, like really. And then she was really mean, and so he was like, "Told you." Like, so that's how that went. But so generally, I like to lead. I mean, it just naturally comes out of me. And as a child, when I was bossy, like my parents spoke that into me, my grandparents spoke that into me, that I would be a great leader instead of like, "Can you sit down because you are too bossy?" But really, like changing that bossy into leadership. Right. And so I have just have that tendency to lead. It's just how God created me. And so watching him really gently take that role of like, no, I'm the leader of our home.
Right.
Let me lead this. And feeling and being able to completely trust him in that, because I love to lead, it's hard for me to submit to leadership. And so within our marriage, that's kind of been a struggle of mine. It's something that I have to be really conscious about and make a choice to trust
his
leadership.
So differently, because he's like, he's more of a quiet leader, where you're more of a you're more of a in your face kind of, not really in your face, but you're, you know, between the two of you,
right,
you know, you're the more boisterous
voice definitely
between the two of you. But there's something to a silent power, you know, there's something to that. And so when
definitely
speaks, you listen.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. If he says something, like, he has something to say.
Yes.
And when I have, when I'm talking, people are like, she's talking again. Like, really?
She's still talking.
Could you be quiet for a moment? And so watching him really come into that leadership role and how beautifully he's led us, and like the moments when I was just bawling my eyes out, and like he would stop and pray, or he would stop and tell me like his rendition of the Hannah story in the Bible and Rachel and Sarah, and like listening to him not necessarily recite the word, but like tell me the story
of women in the Bible that have experienced infertility.
Exactly. Exactly. And then seeing him when he does say no, like to treatment options, he has said no because I don't think that your heart is ready. Like, I don't think that you're in a position with God to go in this direction, and really been very insistent that I need to spend more time with God before I go into this, because of my relationship with the Lord and me being a fixer and me taking charge and having this leadership quality about me, I would put myself in this situation of Sarah and Abraham. And so the story of Sarah and Abraham, the short version, the Meg version, is that they were both past childbearing age, and Sarah started to doubt God's promise that they were going to have a child, and not just one child. He said they were birth many nations, and here they are, but she's way past menopause and they still don't have one kid. And so she says, well, maybe what God really meant was, let me find another solution. Like, let me get creative in this situation. And so she sent him to have a kid with their maid, I guess is what we'll call her. And so he did have a child with them, and it brought so much hurt to their marriage, and God straight up told her, like, no,
I didn't tell you to do that.
That's not what I did not tell you to do that. And so Thomas has been really good about telling me, like, your heart isn't ready for that, and kind of showing me, like, that's where your heart is right now. And so when your heart is ready to fully trust God and he gives us permission to step into treatments, then we'll do that.
And that journey is going to be so different for everybody, right? I mean, when people are ready and let's be clear. I mean, I'm a firm believer that God sends doctors and solutions, you know, in many different forms, but for you guys specifically, that's been your journey. And and that's been
exactly
where you guys have been for, so far.
Exactly. Like, completely believe that these treatments are, like, there's nothing wrong with these treatments. Yeah. That the medical industry is a gift.
Yes, absolutely.
And that everything is good and from the Lord. And so it just being a process of for us, like, this isn't the time for it. And we might not get to the time for it anytime soon. We might, I don't really know, but I'm really grateful for his leadership. Yeah. And I'm grateful for, there was a little period where it hurt deeply and I was kind of pushing everyone away and not letting him in because I didn't see his emotion. Mm. Like, his wasn't as up.
Right.
I'm a crier.
Right.
At the drop of the hat, I cry. It's just, I wear all of my emotions right out here. And he doesn't. And then he also is very much the macho man in, like, I'm so mad because I can't fix it. And so then he's got this sadness and this grief and this mourning and this anger and, like, carrying the burden of my wife's hurting and I can't change anything to make it, you know, to make it better. And he's doing all that inside. And, like, I'm here, I am, like, so upset about it. And so then it got to a point where I was like, well, I'm just going to, like, shut it all down.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to go numb. I won't feel any of it. And I won't show any of it. And so I started shutting people out. And then him coming in and saying, like, here's my emotions because I can see, like, you're in a healthy place right now.
And you guys, I mean, and I'm sure that was eye-opening for him too, to know it's important for him to express those emotions to you as well.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, and I don't want to generalize, but I feel like sometimes for guys, they feel like, especially when you're overly emotional, like, well, not overly emotional, but but emotional, you know, because
yes,
I'm a crier too, so I feel like I can talk about this openly. But, like, I know, like, for Dre and I, there are times where I feel like he thinks I can't handle his emotions and mine.
Right.
But honestly, it brings me comfort and it calms me to know that he's feel, because sometimes I feel like, I don't know, maybe if he's not feeling anything, then I have to feel for both of us or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Or, like, I'm crazy for feeling this deeply.
And so just, like, to know that we share that emotion can bring you so much closer, so much quicker. Then for them to feel like they have to put their feelings in a box to protect us, where it comes from a good place, they feel like they're protecting us, but really it just leaves us in this unknown place of not knowing how they feel. Do they feel anything? How are they handling their emotions? I mean, who is your outlet? Who are you? Because if you're my outlet, but you're not talking to me, where are you going? What are you doing?
Exactly.
And so it really is a process for the husband and the wife to process emotionally this whole process of infertility is very, but I'm sure at the end of the day, because you guys have experienced all of this, you're so connected emotionally now because you have
it was really a turning point in our marriage.
You have to have
not
these
just
hard
in
conversations with each other.
Yeah. Not just in infertility, but just in the health of our marriage.
I'm
it was a turning point of us both.
This,
like,
is a make or break. I mean, this is enough to break people down and they don't survive it. I mean, there are a lot, I'm sure there are a ton. Now, that statistic I don't have, but I would be very interested to know the couples that do experience infertility, how many stay married through it.
Yeah. And I've seen broken marriages after infertility because it is so heavy and there's so many emotions that go through it, and it's almost like this stigma. Thankfully we're coming out of the stigma, but there's a stigma that these men can't feel these things, and
it's awful.
Then it creates this terrible place in a marriage of this crazy emotional wife and this hard emotionless man, and nobody's has a healthy way of dealing with it.
Both of y'all crazy.
Right, exactly. We're all just falling apart.
Right. So I'm going to, this is my last question for you. And I feel like we've covered so many things and so much information. And just to kind of wrap it up, what advice do you have for women that may be experiencing difficulty getting pregnant right now?
This one's hard. I think that really that to find that friend or that little community where you can bear all the details and be upfront with them, like, unless you do want, like, be upfront with them what you want out of it, of like, please don't give me advice. I really just need to vent. And I just need somebody to call and pray over me. And I just need somebody to know this is happening so that I'm not sitting here in it by myself. But I don't need anybody's opinion on it, kind of thing, of having that safe place of, I'm going to come share this with you, and I don't want anything in return except for you to just tell me it's going to be okay. And so I think that, and then also for people who are the ones on the receiving end, like, don't be so quick to give advice. Be quicker to draw out the prayer and draw out that second question rather than a solution, even though it's completely coming from a place of pure intentions and wanting to be helpful. But let me tell you, it's exhausting. And if one more person tells me quit thinking about it, like, if only it were that easy. Right. Like, I really, really wish. Right. I really wish I could quit thinking about it. It's like this cloud over my head. But that is the one thing I hear over and over and over is like, well, the day you quit thinking about it is the day you get pregnant. Like, oh, okay.
Right. Why didn't I think of that?
Exactly.
Well, I am so appreciative for you being so open and honest today. We had some pretty tough questions that I asked you today. And I know it can't be easy to be so open about something that's super personal. Also, Thomas, shout out to you. Thanks for letting Meg come on and tell me all y'all dirty secrets. No, I'm just kidding. No, I really appreciate it. And I truly believe that so many women will be so touched and really feel a sense of relief knowing that they are not the only ones going through this season. And and it is just a season. I know for a fact that God will find a way to answer that prayer in one way or another for everybody that's waiting right now. And so just most importantly, that those same women can approach this waiting season with God and not alone, and with community, and to find people that they can trust and that they can, you know, confide in with this type of information, because it can be difficult. And I just wanted to share a scripture. Proverbs 13:12 tells us, hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. So if you are in a season of waiting, just hold on a little bit longer. God still has a plan for you, and the desires of your heart will be granted. It may not always look exactly the way we thought it would, but I'm certain that greater is on the other side of this journey. After all, life doesn't come with a manual. It comes with a mom.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.